This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the town where the jazz is swinging high. It's the New Orleans Outsider with Chris Goffmeyer. Oh my. We may be outsiders, but our love for New Orleans is true. So come along as I share it all with you. Sights and sounds, food and drinks. We're here to take a ride with New Orleans Outsider as our guide.
And here are your hosts, Chris Goff, Peter Newkirch, and Justin Appleberry.
I have not met my Waterloo yet at the Napoleon House, but it is one of my all-time favorite places in the greatest city in the world, New Orleans. Welcome to NOLA Outsider. I'm Chris, along with Peter and Justin. And boys, I know we all like Napoleon House. I have been going there since the very first time I was there, sadly, with my parents-in-law and sister-in-law. I had to, break my virginity to Napoleon House with them with me. But besides that, it was a great experience. And I have enjoyed it every time I've gone there. And I know that you boys also like going there. Justin, that is like that is a go-to now, right?
First of all, love the Waterloo reference. That's a nice lead-in.
Yeah.
Sets us up for the whole history of it.
Of course.
Nicely done. Yes, nicely done. Yeah, so Napoleon House, of all the places in New Orleans that I love, and there's different reasons to love a lot of different things, but to me, Napoleon House has the most interesting history, right? The whole, and we'll get into that as we go along about but the history of how, you know, goes back to what the 1797, yeah. And then just the whole thing of why it became its name and everything like that. It's as somebody who enjoys his history and being in there, I get off the plane. The first stop we have is Napoleon House. I'm getting my Zazzerac. My wife gets her Pimm's cup and we're off to the races from there.
Peter, I know you like going there too. I mean, it's basically a staple when we're there.
I always love it. You know, I can always tell, you know, if I need to find you in New Orleans, you're going to be at Fritzl's. But the second place I would find you is at Napoleon House. You have mentioned several times that Muriel's is your favorite place, but I link you to Napoleon House more than anywhere else besides Fritzl's.
You're right. No, that's fair because I think, like I said, I think it was the very first place I ever went to in the French Quarter. We drove my truck down there my very first time. It was, like I said, my parents-in-law, sister-in-law, wife, and my firstborn. And he was just a little kid then. And we drove down there, had no idea. It was really stupid to take a truck down there and park it for $50 a night or whatever it was. But I remember reading, you know, as we all do, we like to peruse the things to do before we get to a town. So when I went to New Orleans, I read about this place called Napoleon House and the history of it and just the, you know, everything's historical in New Orleans, first off. So if you're even a higher level than that, it's pretty cool. And as Justin alluded to, this was built in 1797 and it was a former mayor of New Orleans, Mayor Girard. And he built it with the understanding that he was a huge fan of Napoleon Bonaparte. And by the way, you speak of Waterloo, Justin. I can't help but think anytime I hear Napoleon Bonaparte, I just think of Napoleon going down the water slide on Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. It's the best. I just say that's the Napoleon that I recall.
For you kids out there, that's a good reference.
Yes. If you watch the third Bill and Ted's movie that just came out not that long ago, horrible. You have to go back to the original. Skip Bogus Journey. Go back to Excellent Adventure. But Napoleon Bonaparte.
You got the Napoleon Complex for short guys. You got the whole frame of reference out there. Yeah, absolutely. Us being big men, we don't have to worry about that. But yeah. No, you short guys out there, you might have some reference for that.
They're so short, I forgot about that. But yeah, that's a good point. But you know, Nicholas Girard, who was the original owner of the building, was built in 1797, and he was a huge fan of Napoleon Bonaparte. And you know, it's funny because you hear the rumors of like, why is this called Napoleon House? That's why you first asked, you know, because it's just out of the blue, it's got this name. And so when you start reading about it, this former mayor was actively part of a French-led conspiracy to smuggle Napoleon out of exile in St. Helena. This is after he lost Waterloo. He was exiled, and he was just sitting there by himself, you know, I mean, under, you know, with no escape, basically. He had disease. He was doing poor in health. Ships were allegedly readied in the Gulf, and the house was being prepped for his arrival, but Napoleon died before it could happen, but the plan was deadly serious for its time. Now, that is the history of why it is called Napoleon House. Napoleon never stepped foot in there, but because of the French influence of this building and Nicholas Girard being the level of man he was in New Orleans at the time, he wanted to make this happen. And even though it never happened, Peter, I just and I know you too, Justin, love history, but I just think it's just a very cool story to something that could have been, you know?
Incredibly cool. To think that if he had made it to the U.S., and had been in better health on time, it would take both parts. It would have changed history radically, because they certainly would not have sold out a lot of things. And I mean, the French would have hung on, and not necessarily the French in Europe, the French here would not have been so willing to go quietly.
Yeah, no, it was Justin. I know you've read up on this as well. I mean, it's when you walk into the place. I mean, what obviously feeds into the history and just the lure of hearing about this Napoleon story is the fact you walk into the place, and just as soon as you walk in, and you have the awesome right at the. I always take a picture of the awesome mosaic like tile work on the front where it says, you know, Napoleon House on the floor there, right in the corner, right when you're walking in the room. And when you go in, you have this huge bar to your left, and it looks like it's been there since the, you know, like the Wyatt Earp days of America. Mm-hmm. And the walls are just, they look like they have not been touched clean. They have, you know, handwriting all over them where people have like written their names on the wall. And the place looks like it hasn't been cleaned or touched in 300 years. And I mean that in a good way.
Yeah. So I think in a city full of history, I think the Napoleon House is uniquely defined for like its really, really deep history, not, you know, just in politics and culture, in the whole movement and everything like that. Like Peter said, what if Napoleon had come to the United States? You know, what would that look like and stuff? And not only that, it's just a great place to have a drink.
It is. I mean, and we'll get to some of the movies and stuff that they've shot there, because when I took my kids here this last time, they instantly recognized it being from the latest version of Haunted Mansion. They shot that right at the bar. But yeah, Peter, when you go to do you remember the first time you ever went there, Peter, and what were your thoughts walking into the place?
Oh yeah, there's a reason why all those movies want to shoot there, because it is, they don't have to do anything. They show up and it's a time capsule of what it looked like then. And they haven't changed it, but in a good way. And there's just no reason to change it. I know it's a historically protected building, but it is gorgeous inside in a very simple way. And Munch, I don't think I've been closer for like not full blown dinner, but I've had dinner there, but I almost always go for lunch. Mm-hmm. And it's not a huge menu, but it's always great.
Yeah. I've never been there for dinner either. Always lunch and drinks.
Yeah, it's always like Justin said, it is my wife and I, it is our place. If I had to say what our place is outside of Fritzl's, it would be Napoleon House. It's just where we always have gone since day one. And it is like more of a, as my parents would call it, linner, like a lunch dinner play, like somewhere in between lunch, dinner, nice afternoon thing. Like it's not, it's sort of like, I love going there. It's the kind of place I like going and being like, hey, I've had lunch, and I'm going to have dinner in like 3 hours, but let's go there for a snack, because I want to say I went to Napoleon House again this time, because I always want to go there. And because of that, Peter, like you say, it doesn't have like an extensive necessarily like a dinner menu. You know, it doesn't. It's not. It's it. And we'll talk about the history of the ownership.
It has one menu.
It does. It doesn't have different menus. And it's owned by the Brennans now, which, of course, the Brennans are known for their elaborate menus and all their other restaurants, but they've just acquired it in the last decade or so. But they have kept true to form of what that place has been for many years. And my go-to thing there is always the boudin. I mean, it is always the thing I want there. It's always great. They serve it with like an awesome mustard and bread, and that along with, I don't know, just pick something else to go with it. Usually we get like a quarter or a half muffaletta there. And I want to hear what you guys get, but I do want to get into the debate of the greatest muffaletta of all time. This is something that happens daily on Facebook and groups about New Orleans. Where's the best muffaletta? You know, it's like, I love
constant
the
debate.
I love the Facebook groups. Like every day someone walks in and types, where's the best muffaletta in New Orleans? And I know it's some nice person that's never been there before, but I'm like, dude, do a quick search. The last 12 hours, there's been like three discussions on this. Okay. But I do want to talk about how Napoleon versus others. But what is, like, that is my go-to when I get there. What do you get, Peter?
Boudin, again. And it's, I'm a huge fan of boudin, unless I'm going over to Lafayette or Baton Rouge, that area, especially Lafayette. It's the one place you can always go. They always have it on the menu. And it's a good boudin also.
It is.
And you're right. It's not a complicated presentation, but it's a nice piece of boudin and just some simple accompaniments to it. And always delicious.
What about you, Justin?
Same. I get the boudin, but I also get the gumbo because I got to have Gumbo's a bowl of gumbo within like 3 hours of getting to New Orleans.
They do have a good gumbo. It's one of the few places I get gumbo down there.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
It is a good gumbo. I mean, I think I if you go up and down the menu, and it's available at Napoleon House online if you go to their website. But I mean, up and down their menu, I think I've gotten it something every time. I think I've gotten everything at this point. I've had
well, you know what I like about it, Chris, too, is it's a simplified menu. You know, I don't want to go to Cheesecake Factory where you get like 15 pages of things to choose from. Right, I enjoy having like. You know, because to me, a restaurant, if you have like 5-6 options like that, that speaks to they know how to cook it. They know how to prepare it. It's going to be great no matter what you choose.
Yeah, that, Peter, you can speak to that. That some restaurants are jack of all trades, master of none, right?
Right, right. And their red beans and rice is always stand out. They've obviously been cooking the same recipe for decades or more than decades. Their potato salad, it's not something everybody gets. It's a great potato salad.
That.
And of course, you can never beat any place that sells Zaps gets extra points in my book.
Yeah, if you have not had Zaps, I mean, I try to, in Kansas City here, I tried several times at my place of business to bring Zaps, and I brought them again. I brought them for the crawfish boil. I got 4 boxes of them, but, and I've had more and more people ask about Zaps. I think it's starting to infiltrate more and more the Midwest, but yes, Zaps are the best potato chip available in a small bag. They are.
We keep working. Zaps going to have to pay us some royalties for the KC Market Boys.
Well, that's fine. Yep. They could be a sponsor one day.
Yeah, there you go. Come on, Zach.
You know, something that your wife got once, Justin, that my wife got right after on our next trip was that shrimp remoulade stuffed avocado, it's an avocado salad, basically. Red onion, lemon. I mean, it was really good. My wife was super jealous of that. And so she got that. I think that was maybe the last thing I hadn't had on that menu before, but you know, there's like you said, there's not a ton of options, but it's got all the staples of New Orleans, what you want. If for someone coming from Kansas City or anywhere else and is like, I want traditional, you know, New Orleans-y Cajun food, Creole food, whatever, this is what you're getting. You're getting, you know, your jambalaya is there, your red beans and rice. Boudin is not, you know, my dad loves sausage, hates boudin. I think it's because he thinks
does.
He's no afraid. Huh. He's afraid boudin has, you know, like, you know, parts of a pig that he doesn't want to eat, right? But I'm like, well, what do you think this other brought?
Well, what's a hot dog? Yeah,
I you know, some things sometimes on, you just Perry. Can't get past Come that on, original Perry. Thought. You know?
He wanted nothing to do with that black boudin you got us.
No, well,
that was. I still got some in the freezer. I need to eat.
The blood boudin is a different level, Peter. I do want to be fair. The blood boudin, which, that's a side note. We've gotten blood boudin flown in from New Orleans before. From the, I think, Peter, if I'm not wrong, I think it's the last manufacturer. And they were grandfathered in as a family that have been making this for generations, that they make this blood sausage, this blood boudin. And it cooks and comes in totally black. I fed it to, I gave some to Peter and a couple of my other friends. I was going to give a couple pounds to Garrett, and Garrett had a half a link with me when I made it at our, and he took a, I think he's finished it, Peter, but he said it tasted chalky and he did not want any more. So I gave the other.
Well, how'd you prep it? You just grill it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can grill or roast it. Yeah, no, Garrett doesn't like anything with liver or any organ meats in it. So he passed after that.
Yeah, that was weak, but it was Boudin is great, and this is a nice entry level place to be able to get Boudin if you like sausage. It's got rice in it. It's not something that you can sort of cut up, and you have to eat it in a link. You know, you can't. It's right, not like right, something yeah. you can make in little quarter shape size stuff. But
you got to dive right in, make the commitment, go for
it. I know everybody links gumbo to Cajun to true Cajun cooking, and I'm not gonna, that's another, it's kind of like the every half hour someone's arguing some point about Cajun cooking, but I would say Boudin is the most iconic Cajun food. If you're like,
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. When you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I'm going to try one thing. I want to understand what Cajun is in one thing. I would say it's Boudin.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like, I that is something uniquely to that region that if made correctly and properly the way they made it for generations, they can still do it down there. I mean, of course, I have a friend up here that has a meat manufacturing company, and he makes Boudin, but he cannot make it the same way that they make it in Creole country because the USDA will not allow him to do that up here. But the way they still do it down there is traditional, and it's just better. It's like I think the USDA up here requires you to cook everything thoroughly before you make the sausage with the put it all together. I think that's how it is. I haven't done it personally yet, but I think you're right, Peter. I mean, I don't think anyone, I know plenty of people eat red beans and rice and jambalaya and gumbo and all that stuff up here, but most people, I don't think the very first time I asked them if they've had Boudin, they have not had it up here.
And for everybody who has no idea what we're talking about, Boudin is spelled Boudin. It is a sausage that is stuffed always with rice, generally with pork, can be various parts of pork. It is kind of a, kind of like the Northeast scrapple. It's can be leftover parts from when they're slaughtering hogs. But
yummy.
We've also seen it is not uncommon to see it made with other things, including shrimp, alligator. You don't really see beef. I think it dries out too much.
Yeah,
Not heavily spiced. Always well seasoned, but it's not spicy. I've never had one that's spicy.
No. And if you go to any place that you want to fly in food, from all these places that are, I always look up stuff to buy my friends for Christmas or whatever. It's always, they all have, like you said, varying types of Boudin, and that is a staple down there. And I think you're absolutely right. That is but back to it. It is on.
Goddamn golf. I guess my Christmas present was lost in the mail.
You didn't get that blood Boudin.
No, I missed it. Peter, did you get yours? I missed mine.
I did. Oh. Well, yours is probably in my freezer.
I'll come over. We'll have that then.
I do want to see if you'd like that because it's different than regular Boudin, but, back to the history of the building, though, I found this interesting. One thing that is that when you walk into Napoleon House, they're always playing opera or classical type music, and it is a staple, and it has been that way for, you know, decades and decades and decades. So the Impastato family, they bought this in 1914. They bought it from, I don't know if it was from the Girard family or not, but under Joseph Impastato, it became a hub for artists, musicians, and writers. And it was it really had a reputation as a gathering place for intellectuals, really. I mean, what was interesting is if you see some of the people, if you look up, like, who are some famous people that loved Napoleon House? Tennessee Williams. It was like, yeah, he has his own seat. Did you know that? Did you know that if you walk into the the main area there by the bar, and there's that sort of curved, the dog's getting into the, he heard the Boudin talk.
Yeah, if you dog, the dog's excited over here. Sorry.
If you heard the arch that you can sit under in that far back wall by the bar, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but that was Tennessee. That's the Tennessee Williams corner. That is where he sat and did a lot of business.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know that, Peter?
I did not. My favorite thing about Tennessee Williams is that he had a cat named Gentleman Caller.
Well, that's a great thing. Well, it was just, they call it Tennessee Williams Corner, and I didn't know that until the last couple of times I went there, and I guess he liked to sit there and write. And other people that Truman Capote,
it's a great place.
Truman Capote was another guy that spent time there. You know, it is a cool atmosphere. If you walk in, especially at night, and even during the day, if it is cloudy out and you go in, it's like candlelit, and it's very hard to see inside. Most of the time, my wife wants to sit in their courtyard. Their courtyard is probably, what is it, 20 by 20? Not very big. It's sort of like many courtyards in New Orleans. Like, it's funny, when I had some friends just come back like a week or two ago, first time ever going down there, and they really loved it. You know, as I've told you before, when I send people down there, it's sort of hard to like get pumped up because I've met too many people that don't like it now. So I'm like, I go in with low expectations and tell them like, okay, it might do this or that. So they loved it, and they were shocked at how every place has a courtyard. They're like, I would love to see a drone shot going over, you know, all these roads in the French Quarter to see all these different courtyards, because they all have them. And Napoleon House is one of those. I mean, you would not think it has what it has, but it is a quaint little place. And every time I go back in that courtyard, I look upstairs, you see the second floor up there. And I'm like, was that going to be Napoleon Bonaparte's, was that going to be his room? You know, like, I don't know. It's cool, but I like the layout. I do.
Yeah.
That courtyard is, you're right. I mean, you can go to every building down there, not just in the quarter. You can get outside of it, and everyone's got a courtyard. Some are gorgeous, some are huge. There's something incredibly comfortable about that courtyard. I'm not a big one to want to sit outside and eat, but that if I can get a table out there, I definitely always would like to eat in the courtyard. On the like the perfect day weather, it's not going to be any. You're not going to get a better experience.
What's funny about that building in particular is when you walk out to the courtyard, and you know, they take pride, as you mentioned, Peter, they take pride, and they have not changed anything. They want to keep the look. They want to keep the, like, I mean, that's what I love about it. It's not a dive bar, but it's got the look of a dive bar because the walls have handwritten things from, like, if you look at the history on those walls, they will tell you that some, like, a lot of artists, musicians, they have written, either signed their name or did it anonymously. And there is stuff all over the walls, in the bathroom, in the main area. And you wouldn't notice it unless you walk up to the wall, because it looks just sort of like, I don't know, just sort of weathered walls. But when you go up, it's like just filled with graffiti. And they have not changed anything. But when a couple years ago, we went to the back, and like part of the wall, because I was reading about it, like even through Katrina and all these other storms, It's got such thick walls. It's really hasn't had a lot of damage to it through the generations here, but like some, I don't know, plaster, cement, I don't know what it was exactly, was falling from the side of the wall in the courtyard. And probably so the next time I went there, there's like this fencing up, and like they have it blocked off. And this is several years ago. It's safe to go, but, yeah. But it was, you know, it's like, man, like, how hard is it to keep the awesome vintage look and feel of it, but also how long is that going to last? You know, like, I don't know how often you're going to have to fix this structurally, you know?
Right. So I think that's one of the key points when you visit Napoleon House. Take your time, tour around, look at all the walls, look at the artwork, kind of just drink it all in, right? Just don't sit at the bar at the table and have a drink and a little meal, but just explore, because it is a really cool, unique atmosphere in Americana history. It's unique in itself of that, just as a, it's almost like a living, breathing, boozy museum.
Yeah, Peter, like, I want to get your take. There's basically four parts of this building. When you walk in, you have the bar area. They seat you. You have a host, hostess, whatever. Mm-hmm. They seat you where you want. But that is the bar area. That's a little louder. You know, that's where the traffic in and out is. Then you go one room to the left through the doorway, and that is sort of like a dining area, more, you know, a little bit more secluded, a little, you know, darker with the candle lit, and it's, you know, it's just harder to see in there. I think the first time you went, Justin, that you were in that room with us in a big table.
Yeah.
You have the courtyard area, which is obviously bright and, you know, a little nice outside. And then you have the upstairs, which they rent out for private events, and they have other things going on there, which, by the way, I hate it when last few times we've gone, that thing has been rented out. The whole thing has been rented out for private events. I mean, we can't go.
Piss me off, man.
It does. It does suck. But Peter, like, I think there's like four parts to this place.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, you know, the bar, you just walk in there and it's not a big bar. It's, I mean, you can sit at that bar, but it's so busy. I mean, they're just producing so many drinks, because there's also all the carry out, because that Pimm's Cup, I know we're going to get into it. I mean, they just don't stop making that drink. There's someone making that and then making everything else on top of it. You know, you can go to that bar and see just Pimm's Cups lined up down the bar, and they're just making, I don't know, 20 at a time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and those aren't craft. I mean, those aren't just like paint by number. Those are craft cocktails they're making there, too. There's time it takes to make those.
Yeah, you know, like I said about the courtyard, it's, you know, just what everything I just said about, I feel like that dining room, I like sitting in there, but I feel like, you know, talking about Napoleon, if he had come to that's where, like, conspiracies or revolutions are planned in that room. Like, there's a table, you just sit there, and there's a group of people sitting there. Yeah. They're having a nice meal, they're enjoying it, and they are planning something very serious that's going to happen in the future.
Well,
no, it is. I mean, and it's cool. They got, it's cool decor. Cool. There's a, I don't want to forget to mention, there's like, when you walk into the first room, the bar area, there is a picture of Napoleon on the wall that has been there ever since I've seen it. And it is just a staple of having, I don't know, it's just the one piece of artwork there that, you know, represents what could have been. So the Impastato family, I do want to mention with them, they were big on, he loved the opera music and the classical music. That is why they continue that tradition through today. The Impastato family sold the business that they had run for, gosh, so many years in 2015 to the Brendan family restaurants. Of, you know, they have so many there. We've talked about, obviously, Commander's Palace and Brennan's and Dickie Brennan's and Redfish Grill and so many, Ralph's on the Park, all these places. But what I, you know, and when they bought it, and we were obviously going to New Orleans in 2015 at that point, we had loved this place. So when they bought it, I was like, man, I hope they don't, you know, gut it and like try to fancy it up, shine it up. And to their credit, they have kept it. You would not know that the, you know, to a person walking in, I don't think if you had gone there 2 years before and now, you would not know that they have done anything different. I think it stayed. They've really kept the culture, the look, everything the same, including the staff. If you go in there, there's waiters, much like a lot of places in New Orleans. There are guys there that I've seen for 15 years.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the Brennan's do a good job of that. They make sure they hold the integrity of the businesses that they purchase, and that's a tip of the cap to them to doing that.
Yeah,
it is a. It is a corner bar, and it has that feel to it, but it also has 200 plus years of history behind it.
Yeah. I mean, to have the, you know, there is a Girard, there's a road named after Girard, to know he was, I mean, he had to have been a multi-millionaire, you know, or the equivalent of a multi-millionaire to own that building, to, you know, to want to be involved in, you know, political, you know, prisoners and bringing them over here and stuff. I mean, obviously he was well-to-do, and the building is a really cool building. It just is. It's just got so much character when you walk in there. I do want to talk about the bar first before we get to the Muffaletta stuff. But I think if the two drinks that I know that they make there, that I think that was the very first place I ever had a Sazerac which I had no idea what a Sazerac was until I went to Napoleon House. Had no idea that was the drink of New Orleans, the official cocktail of New Orleans. And obviously, Peter, for years, we made those at my house and around, and we enjoyed getting a bottle of absinthe now that it's legal and all this stuff. And then also the Pimm's Cup. And the Pimm's Cup is a not nearly as obviously as strong as a Sazerac, but it's got that coolness, the refreshing taste, the cucumber, the summer. So many people love the Pimm's Cup there. Is that what you guys always get?
I've had both, and I feel like that's where we had the whole conversation about using the right bitters, that you have to use the Pachutes, because we kept having that conversation. They just never tasted quite right, not New Orleans. And that's, I feel like the bartender there is the one who told us that.
I call it Peychaud's. I don't know how to say it. I always call it Peychaud's. Peychaud's bitters have like a very distinct, they almost look like grenadine to me when you put it in the drink. Gives it a reddish hue. And I guess I base most of my Sazeracs on Napoleon House's Sazerac. I mean, I've gone to the Roosevelt. We've all had it at the Sazerac bar. We've had them there before. I mean, you can get them anywhere in New Orleans, obviously. But I base the way I look at it on the one that I got there. And it was heavy on the Peychaud's. It was.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And then as far as the Pimm's Cup go, you can't get a more refreshing drink. And it's not. It's not a heavy alcohol content drink. It's and there's this, you know, everyone, they don't claim to have the original because it's not, but they have a most classic one. And that's the one everyone's. And you, if you're down there and it's warm at all, you can't get a more refreshing drink than their Pimm's Cup.
I mean, that is your wife's favorite, isn't it, Justin?
Oh, she loves them.
Yeah, that's, she loves those.
Like I said, for our first, we get off the plane, we're at Napoleon's. I'm getting my Sazerac, and she's getting her Pimm's Cup. That's her favorite.
So their drink, their mix is Pimm's Cup, Pimm's number one, which is the liquor, lemonade, and a splash of 7-Up garnished with a cucumber. So yeah, it's, and they have in the summer, I've gone there and they have different versions. They'll have like a strawberry version and I think a watermelon version. They have different versions of Pimm's Cups, which is always great. But I've never had a bad drink there. I always think their food and their drink is so good for a place that we've talked about, places that you will spend a lot of money at, where it's, you know, Commanders or Muriel's. These places are like, you're talking 100+ a head. But when you go to Napoleon House, that's not it at all. I mean, it's, you still will have like a really good meal and a really good, you know, couple drinks, and you're not, you know, you're, it's half the price of these other places we've talked about.
Right. Now, do you fellas usually sit at the bar? Do you guys get a table or just mix and match? Because we've mixed and matched.
We mix and match. I've been in all the areas, but my wife is, I mean, she wants vitamin D, man. We have to sit outside, which isn't always my favorite thing when it's 100 degrees out, you know, and no breeze. But she wants that sun, man. So we're sitting in that courtyard.
Nothing wrong with that.
I like that dining room. My wife, I think she couldn't be happier down there than having their red beans and rice in one of their Pimm's Cups. That's probably about a most classic meal for her.
So let's talk about the debate, okay? The debate of the best muffuletta in New Orleans. The very first muffuletta I ever had was at Napoleon House, and it was, you know, your traditional muffuletta, which, Peter, why don't you tell me what you know, how to construct a muffuletta?
Well, it's got to be that iconic round sesame bread. I can't say for 100% if it's a different mix than the po'boy bread that everybody uses, but
it seems to be slightly.
Yeah, but it has to be that round, it's a light bread. It's
like 10 inches across, maybe. I don't know, 10, like 8 to 12.
Yeah, I think what are they trying to look to see what they're trying. I think they 16 for a whole sandwich.
Yeah, they do so there you do a quarter, half, or a full. And that is pretty typical in the places you get a muffuletta in New Orleans to have those three options. I mean, half the time my wife's like, want to split a quarter, you know, or whatever.
Right, but, half's a lot. Half is a lot.
It is.
26 for a whole. So I shorted them $10. Yeah. you got to start with that bread. It's got to have the sesame seeds on it. That's a must part of it. Pretty much everyone, they add pastrami. You don't see pastrami on everybody's. Mm-hmm. And they use Swiss and provolone. A lot of places just use provolone, but it's got to have the ham, the Genoa salami. Most places you'll see will do the mortadella instead of the pastrami, but I like theirs. And then of course the olive mix that's what makes the whole salad what it is.
Right.
And I'm with you, Chris. Why would you not want it warm? It's just better warm.
So the debate, if you've never had a muffaletta and it's, if you want a hot or cold muff, here's where you go. You go to New Orleans, okay?
Easy there, muffaletta.
But I'm just shortening the abbreviation. But the hot muffaletta is what you get at Napoleon House, which is what I thought. Like, this is great. I mean, the cheese is melted on the meat is like, and the, you know, the Sicilian loaf or whatever is little crust, a little crunchy on the outside, just soft on the inside. And then Central Grocery, though, is the place that gets the credit for being the first place to ever serve the muffaletta. And so after, you know, and it was open for many years, and then it closed after some damage to the building, and it reopened just this past year. And so they serve it cold. So I guess the debate is, when everyone asks, it always comes down to pretty much Napoleon House versus Central Grocery. And really it comes down to, do you want it hot or cold? And Peter, like, I'm with you. Like, if there's a shot of me, I can't really tell you a sandwich that if given the option, I want it either hot or cold, unless I'm like sitting in 100 degrees, 100% humidity in the middle of the sun. I think I'd want my sandwich always hot.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I did, the first muffaletas I had were not in New Orleans, that they weren't real. Ones, they were from people in New Orleans. They were Italians from New Orleans, in Chicago. It was a place I would go all the time if I had to go, not quite downtown, but down in the downtown area. If I had to go down to that area to work or something, I would always make a point to stop by there if it was during the daytime and get a half a muffaletta. And it was just always delicious. And they didn't even offer them cold, as far as I remember. They only offered them hot. So I just fell in love with them that way. And so, yeah, I don't see the point of getting a cold one.
Same. What about you, Justin? Have you had it anywhere else? Have you had a cold one somewhere?
I've never had a cold one. Yeah, I didn't know that was an option. Yeah, I mean, I always take a hot sandwich over a cold sandwich. A hot meal over a cold meal any day. Unless you're having like a nice salad on an August afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Really, everybody can stop arguing it on the internet now. We've answered the question.
We obviously it's all 3-0.
We solved the internet's problems tonight, boys. There
we
go.
And I'm waiting for tomorrow's post. So there we'll talk about that then. But so like I said, it's been owned by several families. Now the Brennans have it, and I am happy that they have it now, really, because they haven't changed it and they're going to keep it the same. They recently bought Pascal Minnelli's too over in the Garden District, and this is another iconic barbecue shrimp place. So I don't know how the people of New Orleans feel about the Brennan family. Maybe they have hot and cold thoughts on them. I don't know, but every time
I will always eat. You probably got a little
maybe bit. Everyone does in their town for whatever reason. So whatever, I don't care. But for an outsider, it's great because I think I always love, although Redfish Grill got another negative, review the other day, Peter. I don't mean to just take a dump on Redfish Grill, but I will say, Peter, I've gotten yelled at twice now for Redfish Grill. And I did not even tell the second people to go there, but our friend Garrett went there and he said after that meal, he told me that he hated me forever because I ruined one of his meals that he was going to have in New Orleans by taking him to Redfish Grill.
So,
yeah, it was. It wasn't very nice. But anyway, so some of the things that if you walk in there, like I said, the charm of the building is so cool, as we discussed. I mean, it just the look, the feel, the vibe, it's such a cool place. And like Peter said, you don't even have to change it up to have some kind of it looks like a Hollywood set already. So I found it interesting to look at some of the movies that were filmed there, because as I mentioned, the 2003 version of Haunted Mansion put out by Disney, it's got Rosario Dawson in it, Owen Wilson. Several scenes were taped at the bar at Napoleon House. And it's if you watch that movie with your kids or whatever, you will see it automatically. You'll see the back of the bar, the opening room there. It's pretty cool to see it if you like the place. Other movies that it's been a part of. It was part of The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which I watched that back in the day with Brad Pitt.
Missouri boy.
Good Springfield, Missouri boy. JFK had some scenes filmed in Napoleon House, the Oliver Stone flick from 1991. Runaway Jury, starring John Cusack and Gene Hackman. They use it as part of their New Orleans backdrop. 1993's The Pelican Brief, another movie with Denzel Washington and Julia Roberts. And Denzel Washington, also Deja Vu, 2006. So
damn, Denzel loves his New Orleans.
He does. I mean, he likes using it, but it's it is made for Hollywood to come in and shoot if you need some kind of eclectic looking. But and you know, I mean, there's Lafitte's blacksmith shop. I mean, there's plenty of like iconic places that you can shoot around New Orleans. But Napoleon House is high on that list.
And you can see why they shoot those because the courthouse is catty corner from it.
That's true.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
You do have the Court of Appeals and Supreme Court. It's the Court of Appeals at the very least is there. So I always tease my wife. I'm like, you could come down here and pass the bar and be here, you know, because I don't know if I'd want to. Again, the debate of living there or not is always one.
Yeah, you're going to live there sooner or later, Goff.
Maybe. If I hit the lottery, I would definitely have an apartment there.
So the great thing about Napoleon House, it's a place when you get to New Orleans, you walk in there, you just breathe it in. It's like a nice opening segment to your experience of New Orleans. It's just a nice introduction. It's just a nice way to start your week or your weekend or whatever you're going to do. It's it's culture, it's food, it's history. It's almost like the perfect recipe for it for whatever you want to get out of New Orleans. That's probably a good nice place to start, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. What about you, Peter?
I know it's not probably the old, we know it's not one of the oldest buildings down there in the quarter, but there's something about that area right there that feels the most untouched, the most buildings that are just original to that area. It has a little bit of a neighborhood quietness to it that I always like going over there. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, half a block away is the New Orleans School of Cooking, which is one of our favorite places to go.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's just it's a great place here, and I think Justin hit it right. It's a great place to start your trip there. Always, you can head there, you can tell everybody to meet there. It's an easy to find for everybody, and your eye is going to get a delicious meal and a great cocktail at a great price in a beautiful, simple but beautiful building.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yes, and as I get further along and I have more friends going down there and they want like a place that doesn't going to cost them like $200 to go eat, and they also do not need reservations. Now, you could have to stand in line outside a little bit if it's packed on a busy time, but they do not even take reservations. So you can walk in there, which is harder and harder to do in America, to go walk in at a restaurant on a Friday or Saturday at some point, because it seems like everything requires reservations now. But it is a great place. It has great food, great drinks, great atmosphere. You can go any time of the day, and it's very inviting. And yeah, it's just one of my all-time favorite places, and I know you guys agree with that as well. It is a go-to place on any time between lunch and dinner, or either of those as well, to have a great meal and a great time in New Orleans. Well, thanks, guys. This is one of my favorite places, Napoleon House, where I keep saying that. And one of these times, we're going to run out of these places that are going to be on my list of my favorite places.
One of these days, we're going to do a podcast of shit we hate New Orleans.
Well, that's not going to be very long.
No. But it's going to be a 10-minute episode, folks, and we'll monologue through most of it.
Well, I appreciate everyone listening to NOLA Outsider. And again, check us out at NOLAOutsider.com. If you do like the show, and we have finally got ratings now, so we have enough ratings, or we're still at 5.0 star because, mom and my sisters and brothers have all done that. But if you feel the need, please go in, subscribe, and hit give us a good review if you'd like, because we enjoy doing this, and that's all we're really doing it for. Just three guys like talking about New Orleans and enjoy our time there and look forward to our next trip. But anyway, guys, thanks for joining us. We will see you next week here on NOLA Outsider.
See you, everyone.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to the NOLA Outsider podcast. We'd love to hear about your experiences in the greatest city in the world. Email us at outsideNOLA@gmail.com. Also, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/NOLAOutsider or visit NOLAOutsider.com. See you next time on NOLA Outsider.